I'm going to give an update on the status of cosmic strings. And the picture that we start with is the sort of the type 2b, for example, the brain world picture, where we live in a stack of brains. And that's the bulk. And the closed rings will be represented by a graviton, and then all the standard model particles are open string modes. So, and a particular realization we know is that so-called flux compactification, where all the moduli of the six-dimensional manifold are stabilized. And this is sort of a schematic picture. There would be four cycles where seven brains can wrap around, and then there would be some warp throats because the presence of flux causes the geometry to warp geometry. And typically there's more than one, although the pictures I draw is simplified here. So this is what we know as the KKLT vacuum. And we start from once we start from that vacuum, we can consider early universe that we have an extra pair of brain anti-brain, and the anti-brain is attracted to the bottom of the throat, and the brain will move slowly towards it because of the attractive force or some other force due to the effect of the bulk, and that's known as the KKLT scenario. And the D3 brain will move down, and as it moves down, inflation takes place, and when they reach when the D3 reach the anti-D3 brain, they will annihilate. Okay? And the energy released can reheat the universe to start what we call the hot Big Bang universe. So it's a very pictorial scenario. The idea that this scenario is very robust is because the brain position is an open string mode, and an open string mode typically obey something called direct von Hilfeld action. And so instead of usual kinetic term, we write this way, where T is the warp tension. That means the D3 brain tension, but warped as you drop down the throat. So T actually behaves like 5^4 as you go down the throat, where of course it gets cut off because of deformation. But as you go down the throat, it goes like 5^4. And then the Lorentz factor coming in, as noticed by Superstein and Tong, that it goes something like 1 minus 5 dot square over t, and 5 dot is the speed of the inflaton as you move down the throat. But t is the speed limit square. As t goes to 0, means that the inflaton has to move very, very slow. It just, irrespective of the potential, it moves slow. And yet, it's very ultra-relativistic in that sense. And this allows us to generate enough defaults to explain inflation. Now, as the brain annihilates towards the end of inflation, typically what we have a U1 gauge field on the brain and anti-brain, and the tachyon appears as they get very close, and that's tachyon condensation describes essentially the annihilation process. And what happens is the tachyon coupled to one linear combination of the U1s, while the other U1 is not coupled to T. So the tachyon, the complex tachyon field, together with the U1, generate a billion Higgs vortices, as we know very well. And the other U1 plus probably would be confining. So this will give you a kind of vortices due to the U1 minus and some sort of electric flux kind of object, which is due to the confining U1 plus. And this theoretical picture sort of captures the key physics that as the brains annihilate, we will get two kinds of string-like objects. This will be D1 strings, and this will be fundamental strings, typically. Okay, so that means these fundamental strings that we know, objects, D1 brain, D1 string, and fundamental string, can be produced in a way which they are cosmological large, and we call that cosmic strings. So I should point out that the production of cosmic strings are not guaranteed, just to be sure. I mean, one can imagine a scenario where no cosmic strings are produced. Or we can imagine a scenario where the cosmic strings are produced, but they are not stable. Or the stable strings are not produced by Kibble mechanism, for example. Okay, so on the other hand, it's possible that parametric resonance can produce pairs of closed rings, and if the production density of those closed rings, stable closed rings, are high enough, then that can also lead to cosmic strings in the long run. Okay, so now, well-known cosmological properties is that if we produce defects like point-like defects like monopoles in the early universe, that's a disastrous problem, mostly because the monopoles don't interact much, and they will evolve as matter, which means that it goes like 1 over a cubed, and then during radiation era, their fraction contribution to the density of the universe will grow very, very rapidly, and typical monopole of the gut scale will violate the observational bound by many orders of magnitude. That's because monopoles goes like 1 over a cubed. Now, domain wall goes like 1 over a, which obviously a much more serious problem. Okay. Now, cosmic string for non-moving when we go to 1 over a squared seems to be somewhere between these two cases. And naively, one may think that cosmic string will also be disastrous, but it turned out that's not the case, that cosmic strings have interaction in a way such that it will cut itself down to 1 over a fourth during radiation and 1 over a cubed during matter domination. So what's happening is that if you produce domain walls or monopoles type of defects, that typically is a disastrous problem. But if you produce cosmic strings or line-like defects, that generically is acceptable. Okay. So that's well known in cosmological circles. And the parameter that keeps coming in is that the tension of the cosmic string I call mu, and g is the Newton's constant, which form a dimensionless quantity, and this is the quantity that play a crucial role in the properties of the cosmic string as it evolved cosmologically. So I would take this to be typically smaller than minus 10 to minus 6. Okay. So the reason is the following. Is the cosmic string is you have two of them. They can interact, sometimes called intercommuting or interconnections, such that a loop was produced, and loop will oscillate and radiate a decay via gravitational radiation, for example. Okay. Or a loop, it can chop itself off, and this will, again, radiate via gravitational waves and sort of decay away. Okay. That's the mechanism why cosmic strings is cosmologically viable. If the density is very low, then they won't interact much until the density is high enough such that the interaction like this will take place. And if the density is very high, you start with, then they will chop themselves very rapidly, and then will typically go to a scaling cosmic string network solution. So that's the understanding people have. So this is a typical simulation where you have a network of string to start from, and you can see how it evolve over time that they start chopping themselves up, and including self interactions, and the density will be thinned out in a way so that its overall fractional density contribution to the universe goes to more or less a constant. Okay. And it is this property that allow us to consider the possibility of having super string stretched to a cosmic scale sizes and hopefully maybe detectable. Now, the history of cosmic string goes as follows. First is that people suggested in the early 1980s as an alternative to inflation, okay? Because the cosmic string will also generate density perturbation, and people try to use that density perturbation as a seed for structure formation like galaxies and others. And there's a lot of work done during the 80s, and I'm going to borrow a lot of those work in what we try to understand the cosmic string network. 85, Ed Whitten actually proposed that identified cosmic strings as fundamental strings, but he did it in this heterotic string framework, and there's problems with it, including the tensions too high, maybe no production, maybe stability issues. So it's not a viable scenario. Then in the early 1990s, the COBE data on the cosmic microwave background radiation come along and sort of disfavors cosmic strings, but it doesn't rule it out. But towards late 1990s, the CMB from Boomerang, from Maxima, Daisy, showed acoustic peak, and that ruled out cosmic string as an explanation to the density perturbation that seed our structure formation. So by 1995, instead of hyperbolic string, we have this brain picture from type 2A, type 2B, and by Joe and others. And within that, now we can bring back cosmic string, but within the inflationary scenario I just described, for example, and where the cosmic string will come into play, but their role is, in terms of density perturbation, is totally negligible. They sort of play a secondary role in the early evolution of the universe. Now, question is, if they play a secondary role, are they detectable? And the key, of course, now is that what's the density fraction of cosmic strings? And turn out that's not very well understood. Typically, we divide into two parts. One is the infinite string, or very long string, stretch across the universe. And then we have sub-horizon loops. Okay? I would divide these two. The first term is pretty well understood. It's roughly 50 g mu. I'm talking about typical for Nambu Goto string, for example. And 50 is coming from a dimensionless decay rate for cosmic strings. So this term is not is well understood. The second term, the loop term, is not as well understood. It goes like, crudely speaking, it goes like chi, a number, like this number, which is roughly 100, but within an order of magnitude. And then there's a square root alpha and square root g mu, roughly. And alpha, it determines the size, the typical size of the sub-horizon loops that's been produced. And we parameterize it as alpha times t, means the size is alpha t. T is, you can say, is the inverse the Hubble constant, or described, that's a sort of parameterized the size of the universe. And alpha t means that the fraction, alpha describes what fraction of the universe this typical string will be. So it would be the 1/10th or 1/100th, okay, numbers like that. And you would come in like square root alpha, roughly. So this is an approximate formula, but sort of capture the big problem people have. Now, it turned out in the literature, if we look back, alpha can describe in a number of different ways, from 0.25, go down all the way to, say, g mu to the 5/2. And g mu is, suppose, 10 to the minus 10, then this number is very, very, very small. So that means the loops are negligible. So for a long time, people assume the loops are negligible. One reason is because doing the simulation, it's very difficult to get to short distances because of the lack of a computer fine grain. And so it's the unknown of this alpha by typical, let's say, 20 orders of magnitude is a problem that has been around for quite a while. Okay. With the cosmic superstrings reappearing, people try it harder now, and these three groups do some simulations, and the last paper, the Joe Rocha people, do some analytical analysis. And the number that they talk about is not small. It's close to 10 to the minus 4, and maybe 0.1 is what the first paper wanted to do, but 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4 is sort of the number that I think people consider much more reasonable than some number which is exponentially small. So I should take this number as the sort of canonical number to use. And in that case, for tension which is 10 to the minus 6 or smaller, is the region we are interested in, the loop contribution is bigger than the long string contribution. So that changes the earlier picture, which always assumed this term dominates. So now we have talked about there's two kinds of strings. So this is so-called PQ string, in a sense that if we have the 1-0 string, we call fundamental strings, and if we call 0-1, we call D strings. And then in particular, there's a PQ spectrum that we have. And the spectrum depends, of course, particular scenario. But typically, we can have a PQ spectrum where P and Q will give attention like this. So this P squared G string squared plus Q squared times square root times g mu, where g mu is the D1 string that we have up here. Okay. And as Copeland, Meyer, and Paczynski point out, that the interaction of these strings now can produce these Y junctions. And so the physics is much richer than the single kind of abelian Higgs model strings that we have described earlier. But we continue to use the single type of string as a canonical benchmark, and we can consider other scenarios of the string tension spectrum in relation to that benchmark. Okay. Makes comparison easier. So one can actually study this. One can start from, this is not a simulation, but solving a couple set of equations, which for a single species reproduce the data quite well. And what we find is that doesn't depend on the initial condition. For example, let me take the solid line here. The solid line here is the total density initially. And then this is the particular 1-0 kind of species. And then they evolve to a limit, which is called a scaling limit, because that's the omega fraction of energy density. If you start a totally different case, you can start, for example, this one, or you start very low density where it's dominated by the one type of strings. Again, the dashed line, you find that they all approach a scaling solution. So roughly talking about the A goes about increased by 1,000 times, then, which is still very, very early in the universe, that they will approach a scaling solution. So the bottom line means the following. If the initial production is 10 order of magnitude too high from what you want, or 10 order of magnitude too low, doesn't matter. Over a relatively short period of time, they all will approach the same scaling solution. So that's why the G mu is the key number that come in. Okay. Now, gamma we thought to be about 50. If you have more than one species of strings, so typically this is the relative density of the various types of strings. So if you have more than one type of strings, typically compared with the single Nambu-Goto string, you get a factor of 10, maybe 5 larger. And as Jackson, Jones, and Potensky show that if the interaction typical string has a string coupling, instead of like abelian Higgs model where the vortices will interconnect with probability 1, this obviously should go like string coupling square, and then the density will go up. Maybe not as fast as this, but it will increase the density. So we probably have a factor of maybe 1,000 that we can hope for or expect, depends on position, that larger than what the simple scenario has. So that means that we have the benchmark number, but in a more realistic scenario, we can expect the density to be maybe 100 times, or maybe, luckily, maybe 1,000 times bigger. Okay, so that's the typical numbers we have in mind. Now, if the cosmic string, we said that the brain is falling down the throat and annihilated with anti-brain, then the cosmic strings will be produced in the throat. And in the throat, the spectrum is a little bit different. And if we take the Kavanaugh-Strassler throat, for example, the spectrum will look like this. Okay, this is the Wobb factor because of the Wobb, the throat. These strings have the same form, but the fundamental string actually is Zm charged. And so it has a form which is somewhat different. And in fact, for P equals to M, this term actually vanishes, means that P means M of the fundamental strings will bind to nothing. Okay. So, and this formula tells us that you don't have to be PQ co-prime in order for binding to take place. So in that sense, the spectrum is quite different. Now, another way to look at it is that you can think about, suppose M equals 5, I draw 5 strings which meet at the end, and that's what we call baryon in terms of gauge theory dual language, and with a mass also Wobb, but it's proportional to M. So M large, the baryon mass will be large. So the interaction, for example, I have two cosmic strings with of this form. I just draw for the sake of discussion. Is that remember P zero also binds because of the sinusoidal behavior. The formula I give here is only good to 1% internal solution, where the B is some number which property of the throat. But so if you have two strings which now intersect for this particular case, they will produce a baryon-antibaryon pair, and if the loop has it, you will have a baryon-antibaryon. So you can see that you can easily think about closed string loops, where the closed string loops will have beads on it, baryons on it, and so we can consider this some sort of necklace or a string with beads. And the cosmic evolution of this type of string spectrum is not understood. We believe it still scales, but scale with a higher density or lower density, it depends on detail and have not been studied clearly, although some effort was made. Okay, so now I want to go to the issue about searching for cosmic strings. There's a number of proposals here. The lensing, cosmic microwave background radiation, gravitational bursts, and I'll go down the list a little bit very quickly. The first is cosmic microwave background radiation. This is given by, this is of course what we know, the acoustic peaks. This is the curve which you expect coming from the B-mode polarization due to strings. It's very small, and this already is assuming that the string tension is relatively high. Okay, so this is one way. Now, let's look at cosmic string tension in the KKMT scenario, for example. What I'm plotting here is that if we take the beta, essentially the mass of the inflaton, or mass square of the inflaton in relation to the Hubble parameter square, which is measured beta, typically we accept beta to be order 1, but if beta is small, relatively speaking, then the tension of the string is roughly 4 times 10 to the minus 10 around here for base 0 beta, the point that KKMT considered. But if you take beta not equal to 0, you find the tension will increase rapidly, log. And then you can get a tension which is around 10 to the minus 7 or a bit higher, still in a slow roll regime. Where in this case, the tension is high enough, around here, tension is high enough to produce a B-mode polarization in cosmic microwave background that have a chance to be observed. However, the WMAP bound is, because of those and other weakly, plus the Doppler effect by various people, have found that the bound should be 5 times 10 to the minus 7. Remember, if it's 10 to the minus 6, or like some number like that, you can produce enough density perturbation to compete with inflation. But for a tension which is smaller than this, they're subdominant. And as the tension go down, the contribution to density perturbation become negligible. Okay. So now, lensing is the following way, is that if you have a string which is stick out perpendicular to the screen, then you will introduce a deficit angle. And the deficit angle is typically 8 pi g mu. So it's very, very small deficit angle, but you will. And in so doing, objects are, this line and this line is identified as here, but the same object will appear with a double image for an observer which sit on the other side of the cosmic string. Okay, so this is the typical picture of lensing. And in 03, there was a candidate being proposed by so-called CSL1, that they find a double image, A and B here, and they think that that may be a cosmic string lensing event with the Z of both of them same value, and the spectrum are identical as far as they can measure. And in this case, that we imply a string tension which is 4 times 10 to the minus 7, which is pretty good. But the problem, of course, is that one has to look at this more closely. And unfortunately, early this year, Hubble telescope took a picture of this, and once you look at this, this is not a cosmic string lensing. So this is, the data is, you know, you just take a picture and show clearly it's not. And here I borrow from Joe's talk that if it's a cosmic string, you will see something like this. Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. So, actually, there's something I did which maybe I shouldn't, besides disappointment, you can also have embarrassment sometimes. So here what happened is that some time ago, Cowan and Hu proposed that also a lensing candidate, some number of lensing candidates. And then the good thing at that in those days is go to radio telescope and look at it because radio telescope has much better resolution. So, and again, radio signals show that they are not lensing events. So here again, if you have a CSL1, naturally it's go to a radio telescope to look at it. And so what a couple, three colleagues of mine decided to apply for telescope time, we applied to the largest telescope we know, National Radio Astronomy Observatory in New Mexico, which arrays a huge disk. And we submit a proposal, and the referee report came back. It's a very serious matter. There are four referee reports. One say fair, one say good, that's good, and then two say poor. So that's the ranking of four referee reports. And yet we still got a time, so but I don't understand. So early this year, we look at it, and the nice advice to you is that the astronomy community has been so user-friendly nowadays that the biggest telescope like Hubble, like Chandra, like National Radio Telescope, anybody can submit, and all you need to say where to point, so submit a proposal. And they will operate it, they will take the data, they will analyze the data, and they send you a file of data. So that becomes so user-friendly that I encourage string theorists also to try that. But the embarrassment is the following. There's no signal on the radio frequency at all. So this is where CS1. And to show that this is not a mistake, they did see a source somewhere. So, and the two referee reports say poor. Their comment is that we should first use a normal, simple radio telescope to make sure there are radio signal before we get time on the National Radio Telescope, which they're absolutely right. So, okay, so that's a disappointment. And then earlier spring in March, WMAP came along, and WMAP showed that the power spectrum index, which is what we call NS, is 0.95, which means the spectrum is red-tilt. Okay, so instead of this, it's red-tilt. In the acoustic peak you have, it's tilt a little bit that way. And from that, Sergio and Slosa combined with other data and get a number, which say the beta must be smaller than 0.05. But if beta is smaller than 0.05, then you find the tension must be smaller than 10 to the minus 8. Okay, so that's the new number to have. And that's, in a sense, is comforting, because if we find that tension had to be smaller than 10 to the minus 8, and if CSL1 is cosmic string event, then you know, we are stuck. We have no explanation for that. So at least the two issues are consistent. And furthermore, if you look at other regions of the reinflation where DBI come into play, you find that whenever you can fit the data with the red tilt, the tension always low, for reasons that I don't fully understand, that red tilt implies low cosmic string tension. So tension would be 10 to the minus 8 or smaller. So tension smaller means that detection also gets hard. CMB radiation is not doable, and as well as the lensing. So one way to do it is so-called cusps and kinks, which are quite common in a string evolution. As they evolve, they produce a cusp. And a cusp means that this point is moving at a speed of light. Okay? And they will radiate gravitational beam bursts, and that's what people can try to measure and propose by Damov-Vilenkin. So this is a picture. Joe has a movie, but I can't show it because for some reason not compatible. And they have a movie, but I can't show it. But this is a picture which shows that how the cusps evolve, and the white shadow is the kind of energy density surrounding it. Okay, so now they can calculate, Damov-Vilenkin calculate, and that LIGO 2 or advanced LIGO will be able to detect this. So the sensitivity is here. So at a range that we're interested in, they will discuss it. Okay, so I go a little bit fast. However, more recent analysis show that this is not quite doable, more careful by LIGO community people. So I'm running out of time. But on the other hand, LISA will be able to probe all the way to 10 to the minus 15. Okay, that's the picture that you can look at. This is LISA, and this is 10 to the 15, for example, in the range, some frequency range. So essentially means that the gravitational wave bursts or stochastic gravity radiation background have a chance with LISA, and with advanced LIGO, we need to be somewhat lucky. Okay. So that's roughly the picture we have at this moment. And I also like to mention maybe some new way, which is called microlensing, but I sort of don't have time. So essentially, microlensing is that instead of lensing the whole thing, the star is too small to be resolved, so what you wait is you see a double luminosity, and then at some later time of order of 10 minutes or 15 minutes, it will go back to a single. So you will have some light, and then your luminosity will double with no change in spectrum, and then go back. So this way is a way to detect not resolution but detecting stars. Okay. So the rate is sort of on the borderline again. Okay. So another effect, I'm now skip that. So I just summarize. So supersync theory may be tested by cosmic strings, which would be really fantastic because instead of, remember, generativity is tested by looking at the sky, so it's actually Newton's gravity allowed them. So again, here is that maybe the best test for superstring theory is look up in the sky, and if we find cosmic strings, that will be really spectacular. And furthermore, they just have the value such that satisfy all bounds, and yet it seems to be can be detected in the near future. The near is the word that we have to define more carefully. Next 5 years or next 20 years. That's the needs a lot more work to understand the word near. So, of course, the PQ spectrum show a clearly distinct signature. So if you see a spectrum of it, then and the Y junction and all those probably go with it. I think that would be a clear smoking gun for string theory. And of course, a lot more work is needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Any questions?
Gary?
Just a comment. I was talking to Thibaut Damour last week, and he said there's a new bound on G mu from pulsar timing, which was on your list, but you didn't mention it.
Yeah, I did have time, yes.
Yeah, he said that they actually can show that G mu is less than 10 to the minus 8
yes.
Now from pulsar
yeah,
timing.
Yeah, I think that the theory and observation together all say it should be less than 10 to the minus 8. So I'm taking generic number like 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 10. And and the future, you know, also square kilometer array and other things can probably, and together with Lisa, I think 10 to the minus 15 is a number that realistically can be probed. So.
More questions? Matt?
Yeah, here's the pulsar timing. Yes.
Can you go back to your conclusion slide?
What?
Can you go back to your conclusion slide?
Oh.
I mean, this is a great talk. I really enjoyed it. So don't take this as a serious criticism. But there's a certain. I don't really agree with the statements on this slide. For the following reason. You as you showed, all of this is about strings that live in throats, and in fact, you even referred to a couple of specific solutions. And of course, those are dual to gauge theories. And so, indeed, the difference between strings that would come from gauge theories and strings that would come from a real gravitational theory of superstrings are going to be at the 10 to the minus 8 level.
Yeah.
So I'm confused as to how one can really claim that if we see these strings in the sky, we'll really have evidence for superstring theory per se.
Right. So the statement is that in particular, for example, go down the throat, you have to describe. You can describe by gauge theory. For example, we use the word baryon for these beads on the string. So those are complicated, strongly interacting gauge theory. Okay. So the way I would look at it is the following, is that if you discover it, not only you show the superstring theory is correct, you show the gauge gravity duality is correct. Okay. Now, so it's a two birds with one stone. Now, the thing that you have to ask is that if I just do pure gauge theory, okay, how can it be produced cosmologically? And the way I know how to describe it is go back to the gravity side and look at how the whole process, brain, anti-brain, collide or flow during inflation time. So not only the spectrum has to fit, you know, they have to be produced. And if you look at gauge theory side by itself, say it's only gauge theory, then I don't see how you can say they're produced. Okay. So there's a production mechanism that has to come in if they appear in the sky.
So, but just let me say, you're comparing that with the, say, with the Abelian-Higgs model where you don't get the PQ strings. But
which model?
Abelian-Higgs model, where you're comparing
yes,
that.
Right,
but could
right.
You, maybe there is a simple field theory model that we haven't studied that has PQ strings.
Oh, sure. That's exact PQ strings. That's exactly.
Well, but
Matt is saying that you take the gauge theory tool and you can use gauge theory to describe them. And the question is, then why? What does that prove? That just proves that that's cosmic string generated by a non-trivial gauge theory, and why does that have proved the string theory is correct? That's his question.
No, but it could be any model independent of that. Just so you could have a field theory model that gives you PQ strings.
Oh, sure. Well, there would be typical, will be a different spectrum. And so that if you find it, you have to measure spectrum and the relative density as well. So.
Okay. Maybe yes?
Thank you. Although my first question was already asked and I think there was a little discussion, I would like to probably pose the question in the following way. Of course, it is interesting if eventually some fundamental physics at the gravitational level is described by strings, and although they may be gauge theory strings, they could be described using gravitational techniques. But I think the question whether eventually the fundamental theory behind it is a gauge theory or some string theory that has to be defined in a different fashion is important, because it has it affects, in fact, the way we think about several questions like the landscape, etc., as several people in this audience have argued before. So my question, on the other hand, my second question, has to do with lensing, both weak and the usual lensing that you described. How is it is to tell a string from another distribution of matter, in that case, from the way we look at lensing today?
Oh, so the typical lensing event is the double image, which is clearly different from usual lensing. Usual lensing don't give you double image with no distortion. That's the picture that I borrow from Joe, who borrowed from Moro. The micro lensing again is that the image should, you see a single star which you cannot resolve because the angle is so small, and then you always see at a later time you see a double image. So the light luminosity is doubled, no spectrum change, okay, and then you would go back to single. So that's clearly not a usual lensing. Usual lensing, you know, will not be just doubling. Will be, for example, changed to some other shape. Okay. And furthermore, it's sort of the time scale also tells you what we expect. We expect like about 1,000 seconds, for example, the time scale of that happening and disappearing for a string with tension 10 to the minus 10, for example.
So.
Then,
so what happens with, for example, ground wars and stuff like that, right? This is the same thing.
Ground?
There have been microlensing surveys so far, and precisely they have signals where timing varies between.
Yeah, so you have to combine this. You combine with LISA, and which is gravitational wave burst plus stochastic. Okay. And so all those things for tension up to 10 to the minus 15, I think they're all doable. And you have to do it together. I would say that's the best way to check that. So the cusp also form quite easily for the loop. So gravitational bursts is something that one can hope for. And they have particular time form a waveform which is very distinct from any other signatures you have. And the curve I show also have a massive black hole binary, white dwarf binary, and all those things. And they have different frequency distribution, and they will have very different signatures. So.
Okay, let's have a break for coffee and come back at 10:55.
Joe, you want to show your whip? I don't know.